Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I too am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, good evening, everybody, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. So glad to have you guys here tonight. As some of you know, I've been, chaotic in my life. We're getting ready to move, and tomorrow is the day that the moving vans are going to show up bright and early, and we are not exactly ready. I'm not the most helpful sometimes. We're downsizing a little bit, and when I went down and saw our basement, I realized we're going to have a lot of stuff for the disabled veterans on Friday morning. So this will be my last night in this studio, and next week, of course, my first night in the new one. So kind of excited to finally get this thing over. Been going on for a couple of months, and I'm ready to take my life back and enjoy the rest of the summer. So anyway, welcome. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest or guests in the case of tonight. Others, I introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, author of In a Flash, Miracles Here and Beyond, found at inaflash.org. Or if you're on Facebook, you could like me at facebook.com/inaflash.org. I'd like to thank Brain Injury Radio sponsor, Traumatic, I'm sorry, you guys, I'm losing it tonight, Brain Injury Radio. I'd also like to thank the Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. I encourage you to check them out at lapublishing.com. As you'll see, everything that they publish is brain injury related. They have a veteran section that is expanding all the time, and we're talking about sports tonight, and they've got more and more in their sports section. And of course, these are things for survivors, caregivers, neuroprofessionals, and other interested parties. Lash is the leading publisher on brain injury, blast injury, PTSD, and concussion. And I want to thank them for sponsoring my show. Tonight, I'm excited to have two guests on, and in the time that we've gotten to talk, it's just been very interesting, and I'm looking forward to our interview tonight. It appears that the complexion of concussion is changing, and particularly in sports, we're hearing more and more about it. In fact, this is probably a time to really take advantage of being able to raise awareness and advocacy for brain injury, because two big special interest groups, the veterans and sports, are bringing it to light. And tonight I am delighted to have my two guests. First one of my guests tonight is Phil Hostler, ATC. Phil is a certified athletic trainer at East Brunswick High School, East Brunswick, New Jersey. He has authored 5 books and 39 articles in the healthcare field. He has traveled with Olympic-level teams 4 times to South America and Europe. He has been a director and officer in athletic training associations for nearly 25 years. Phil received several distinguished athletic trainer awards and has been inducted into 4 Hall of Fames as an athletic trainer. A little bit later, we're going to be joined by Rose Marie, and she can get me on this, Scalaro Mosier, PhD, ABN, ABPP-RP. She is a neuropsychologist, clinical researcher, and the director of the Sports Concussion Center of New Jersey. She's also the author of Ahead of the Game, The Parent's Guide to Youth Sports, put out by Dartmouth College Press. She also appears in the documentary The Smartest Team, shown on PBS and available at Amazon. You can read more about Rose Marie at her website, Rose Marie Mosier, MOSER.com, or at www.sportsconcussionng.com. I think we're going to bring on Phil first, and then Rose Marie is going to catch up with us in just a little while. Let's see if I can get Phil on the line. Phil, can you hear me? Hello, is this area code 609?
This is Rose Marie Mosier.
Hi, Rose Marie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, I will just see which one of these people. There's several people on the board tonight, and I guess I didn't get, I guess I should, 732. Why don't we bring on Phil? There's some questions I want to ask him, and of course, feel free to jump in. And I think we're going to go through some questions with Phil, and then he's got an early appointment, and we'll talk a little bit more about you and what you do, because as I understand it, you guys join at one point, but then you both handle 2 different aspects of this subject. So let me
There's probably also a lot of overlap too. So if we can jump in each time, you know, whenever, that might work too.
Sure, you bet. Let me see if this is Phil. Phil, is this you?
Yes.
How are you doing
I'm here,
tonight?
Kim. Very good, thank you.
We can hear you loud and clear. And Rose Marie dialed in first, and so I hit her mic. She's on with us, and I'm going to direct some questions to you first, and, of course, Rose Marie can jump in as well, and then you said you had an early morning appointment, so you let me know when it is that you have to go, and we'll go on and talk a little more to Rose Marie about what she's doing. So we'll try to get through the first part with you. It appears to me, being a, and this is, you know, to both of you, I've been a host on Brain Injury Radio for a little over 2 years now, every week. And when I had my brain injury, it was in 1995, and I say tongue in cheek that it took me writing a book, well, it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a host on Brain Injury Radio to learn anything. I really wasn't validated by the medical profession. about chronic brain injury. Now, in my case, it's a little different than what we're going to talk about with you guys tonight, but with the ruptured aneurysm, it was a success because my life was saved, obviously, but there was never any talk of any challenges I might have that would change my life completely, and there wasn't any support groups in my area then, and there's not now. And so I came here after just writing one gal's story about what happened, never having met another survivor, and it has just been a wealth of eye-opening knowledge being a host and getting to hear not only the audience but guests like yourself have really educated me over the last couple of years. And it appears that, you know, when I was a little girl, another thing I learned is that the more blows to the head that you have, that there can be a cumulative effect. So as I've listened to folks on the show before, guests, I realized that I actually had 3 traumatic brain injury situations prior to my having my ruptured aneurysm. Now, when I was young, and that was half a century ago, you know, when you fell off your bike, I remember one time going down a hill with gravel, putting on my brakes, going over the handlebars, landing on my forehead, and getting what we called back then a goose egg, a big goose egg on my forehead. And basically, the protocol back then was something like, and I don't have a good memory, one of my residuals I wasn't told I would have, but, you know, basically to not let somebody fall asleep and shine a light in their eyes and make sure that their pupils are the same size. And if you woke up in the morning or stayed up and you appeared, quote unquote, appeared to be normal, life just went on and there wasn't any more discussion about it. And it seems that in this time period that's elapsed and more, just more recently, we're getting more knowledge about the effects of concussion, and it isn't just a bump in the head and you go merrily along your way all the time. Even a mild concussion can leave you with residuals that you'll be dealing with for the rest of your life. But Phil, in your opinion, now what is the definition of concussion?
Well, we are so much smarter. I mean, we, meaning everybody who treats them. I've been doing athletic training for about 40 years now, and in the last 10 or 12, I'm a lot smarter about concussion, as is the world. We know now, for example, the athletes and the parents that I work with, it's important that they understand an athletic injury, your knee, your thigh, your ankle, usually produces a visible sign. You could pick out the spot. You can see the black and blue. You could see the swelling. There's obvious physical changes, and you know exactly where it hurts, and you know exactly when it's gone down, and it feels better.
Concussion, right.
Concussion is what people have to understand is it's not a physical change to the surface of the brain per se. It's much more a chemical disturbance. The chemical and the neurons of the brain, they just don't quite mesh up for a little bit. And that explains a lot of what you get with concussions, that slight memory loss, sensitivity to noise and light, lethargy, fatigue. So it's really a chemical disturbance, and because of that, you have to treat it differently. Obviously, you can't put ice on your brain. You can't put heat on your brain. You can't wrap it. So it really comes down to the handling of that chemical disruption in the brain more so than a physical disruption in the brain.
I've got a question for you on that. And go ahead and add, Rosemary. I heard you're going to jump in, and then I'm going to ask you. something.
Especially, you know, especially for parents who might be listening, you know, they want to know, okay, so what is a concussion? Really, what is it? How do I know? And basically, a concussion is any time there is a force to the brain. It could be a hit directly, or it can just be a rotational force or a whiplash force. And as a result of that, the individual feels a change in their mental status. What does that mean? They could feel dazed. They might feel a headache. You know, some people say, oh, it's like a, you know, some sort of feeling dazed and dizzy. I got my bell rung, which is a sort of a slang way of describing it.
Right.
But essentially, there's a force to the head results in a change in mental status, even if it's brief. The important thing is the individual may feel fine after a few minutes, but because of the neurochemical changes that are occurring, sort of a cascade of neurochemical changes that occur in the brain, the symptoms may not really fully show till hours or even days later. And that's why you have to be very careful about what you do following a suspected concussion.
There was a quarterback, Kim and Rosemarie, in the NFL. I won't mention any names, but he was playing Monday Night Football. He suffered a concussion in the first half by his own admission later. He played the entire second half of the game on television and doesn't remember it.
Wow.
So that's the hard part with concussion because, as Rosemarie said, it's so important that 24, 48 hours afterwards to not assume that just because you were fine yesterday, a little slight headache, but nobody's really worried about it. There should have been more investigation going on because concussions are sneaky. They can sneak up on you later when you least expect them.
Absolutely. One of the things I wondered, and as you mentioned, things have changed. When you first said a chemical change, I cringed a little bit because I've heard so many times, this happened with myself, but I've also heard it from hundreds of people that have called in, that at a time when the medical profession wasn't quite as well-versed on brain injury as they may be starting to be, a lot of times people would go in with these symptoms and traditional diagnostic materials didn't work. And too many cases of brain injury became mental cases. Chemical, when you said chemical, it just made me think of all of the people that were trying desperately to convey the fact that they had, you know, something happened when I got my bell rung. I've got a problem, you know, a problem that came out of that. And too many times people wind up where I affectionately say the shrink boneyard when the medical profession is maybe pelted the pill du jour and the person doesn't respond or isn't quote-unquote cured, that a lot of times, and I've heard it time and time again on here, that people with concussion that suffer those residuals wind up being sent to a different kind of doctor. And so I do understand what you were saying, but I know there was probably a couple others in the audience that probably cringed because they have a real injury. And sometimes it isn't treated like a real injury, you know. So I'm hoping that shows like this and a lot of the other professionals that we have on that are observing these things and finding out that they are truly real, and as a result of that blow to the head, it's not something that someone is imagining or faking just because they don't, quote-unquote, look like they have a brain injury, whatever you think that looks like, you know, that we joke about it here. All of our hosts are survivors, and unless you're drooling applesauce and dragging a leg, people tend to think that you're faking or that it's not as bad as you, you're making it out to be, or when you say, God, I just can't remember, you know, somebody else will say, yeah, I've got a lot of problem with my memory too. Well, you know, is it every day, several times a day, you know, leaving the pan on the stove, losing the keys, just kind of a state of confusion is a little bit different than all of us who just forget from time to time. But how are concussions graded or measured, Phil?
Well, many concussion experts explain that diagnosing concussion, because of things you were just saying, you have to talk to the person. You have to, you can do some tests. There are computerized assessment that do brain function, memory, long-term memory, short-term memory, speed of recognition. So you can actually exercise the brain and see how it's doing. But most experts will say that diagnosing a concussion is as much or more an art than a science, because there is no blood test right now. CAT scans and MRIs, X-rays will not pick up a concussion because, like I say, outside of a bleeder, which is the next step up in severity, CAT scan, MRI, very useful for someone who has very pronounced or prolonged symptoms, that there's something more going on than a simple chemical disruption in the brain. So CAT scans and MRIs certainly have their place in brain injury, no doubt about it. But most concussions themselves do not show up on these. So I've had parents go take their son or daughter to the emergency room, come back the next day and say, Mr. Hostler, we had a CAT scan done. It was negative. Can he play today?
Right.
Well, no, there's a lot more. I have a lot of questions you have to ask you, son. And just, it was going to be negative before you left. I could have told you that. Unless
right.
you had serious, serious symptoms, projectile vomiting, total memory loss, seizures. You know, you crossed a bad line when your symptoms have become that bad. Well, that's when a CAT scan or an MRI probably would have picked something up.
Right.
Rosemary, what's been your experience with the diagnostic testing world?
Well, with regard to, you asked about grading, we don't grade concussions anymore. So if someone goes to a doctor and the doctor tells them they have a grade 1, 2, or 3 concussion, then you know that they're not up to date in terms of their medical knowledge of concussion. So that's right off the bat. So that's just a clue. If you go to your doctor and your doctor grades your concussion, they're using an old system that we no longer do, because we have found that there are some individuals who suffer more severe symptoms initially, let's say loss of consciousness or amnesia, but seem to recover faster than other individuals who maybe didn't have those symptoms initially, but later on seem to have symptoms that last longer. So those kinds of things, initial reaction may not determine necessarily whether you're going to have symptoms the next day and how long they're going to last. The way we diagnose it is really by interview at this point and symptom checklist. Was there a direct hit? Was there an episode where there was a significant force to the head and brain? And was there a change in mental status and symptoms as a result of that have lingered that weren't there before that? Then we would say, yes, you have a concussion, and then you need to see someone who is a concussion specialist to determine how to get you back on the road to healing in the best way, so it prevents you from getting what we call a post-concussion syndrome, where the symptoms can last indefinitely.
Yeah, it's important because as Rosemary said, we don't grade them anymore because it doesn't matter what it is. If you have a concussion, you have a concussion.
Right.
Doesn't matter what kind of grade you put on it until you no longer have it. Then if it lasted 2 days, 3 weeks, I'll give you a grade on it if you want, you know, mild, moderate, or severe, but we don't do that up front anymore because it doesn't change the course of action. All the questions are going to be the same. All the actions and tests are going to be the same. unless you're crossing, like I say, there's a bad line. If you cross that line, then we send you to the emergency room for an imaging test.
Okay.
With regard to little kids, they're probably, even if they're not going to want to image them anyway, because kids can't stay still long enough for a good image. It's hard to get a child to go through an MRI machine and be totally still. So you will find that most pediatricians at this point will not be doing imaging and would rather observe and watch the young athlete over time.
Okay. Yeah, and again, as Rosemarie was saying, there's a big difference between an adult recreational basketball player, a high school basketball player, and a fifth grader playing basketball. Adults recover faster than teenagers do. Teenagers feel their symptoms longer and harder. They may have lingering effects even after the symptoms have subsided, because developing brains are going through several developmental stages, and that's why it's so important to get an accurate record on teenagers' number of concussions, because you don't want to repeatedly disturb the potential developmental that's going on.
Right.
As Rosemarie said, the elementary school children are more likely to complain about physical. They may misbehave because they simply can't put in words what they're feeling. It's difficult for the elementary school kids to give you the solid answers that teenagers or adults can, and they each, all three levels, deal with them slightly differently.
Hmm. Now, Rosemarie, you said that if a person was deemed to have a concussion, they should see a concussion specialist. Is that a neurologist?
Well, there are a variety of concussion specialists. Just make sure that you see, there are some pediatricians who have now specialized in sports concussion, for example, specifically. There are neuropsychologists, such as myself. I'm a doctor, but a neuropsychologist, who have expertise in diagnosis and treatment of concussion. And there are some sports medicine docs and some neurologists. Typically, individuals will go to their primary care physician first, or the ER, to be sure there's nothing more serious, such as a brain bleed or some other more serious brain injury that will need immediate intervention. And
right.
Then once they've been diagnosed with, okay, you have a concussion, this is what you need to do, they will prescribe some rest, perhaps, and maybe some medication for headache or whatever. But if it doesn't go away very quickly, then you really should see someone who knows concussion, because you've got to remember that your primary care specialist or your neurologist or your pediatrician has to be an expert in many different disorders, not just concussion. So you want to make sure that you go to a physician or a doctor or a licensed healthcare professional who has specific training, expertise, and practice with concussion.
Right. So that's a good thing to ask for the parents.
There are a number of questions to ask, yes.
One of the biggest things, Kim, that we've encountered is I tell all my teenage athletes, don't get upset if seven adults in your life are asking you a bunch of questions for the next couple weeks, because we can't see your brain and we have to keep asking you, how do you feel today? How is this? Is this any better? I mean, 80 to 90% of students recover in 1 to 3 weeks, okay? So the vast majority settle down. But in that settling down process, there's still daily questions that go on. I mean, one of the things that I do at school is I have a whole portfolio of information that I use to assess my athletes, and I have a form that I actually send home to the parents with about 6 or 7 questions, and they observe and rate their own child on these questions, and their teachers have a similar form. So the teachers observe and make notes. I see the athlete every day. The school nurse may see the athlete every day. The doctor may see the athlete every 4 or 5 days or something, but there's a lot of observation and questions going on because we simply have to know what's going on in the young person's life because athletes are motivated. They don't
right.
want to sit out. If you don't ask them, they're not going to tell you.
Exactly. In fact, I was going to bring up an example of this, although I do want to say something really quick and hopefully I won't forget. Audience, I see a couple of you have your hands up. If you're new here, I normally go through the interview first so we don't jump too far off track. So write down your questions. We will have time for some Q&A when we're finished with the interview in just a little bit. And we encourage you and want to hear your questions, but I usually go all the way through the interview first. So I'm not ignoring any of you there, but you might be new and not realize that that's the way I do it around here. Otherwise, I forget what track I'm on. But parents, I think what I was going to tell you, Phil, was, and I'm glad to hear you talking about these questions that you have. I have an acquaintance, gal friend, who was quite the jock when she was young, and she played soccer vigorously, I'm sure. And now, before they had coaches or someone like you that was on the field all the time, they would allow parents with some of these elementary and junior high kids. And I remember her kid did have one concussion and then took another blow to the head and had some of that vomiting you're talking about. But she came up and said to the coach, "You've just got to let him play. It's the playoffs, and he's worked so hard all season, he'll just be heartbroken if he can't play in the big games." And I just looked at her, and I thought, wow, she knows what I do, but, you know, brain injury isn't, I guess, something she's acquainted with and didn't really equate the fact that her kid had had one concussion, possibly on a second one, and she's ready to bulldog the coach into sending him out again for the playoffs. And I'm not quite sure how that came out. I think I kind of stopped listening at that point. If you've been through what I have, you would wish that on no one, let alone, you know, a little kid in grade school or junior high school. I mean, it's certainly not worth the rest of your life, you know, the quality of life that you're going to have to be taken it, I think, quite that seriously when you've had repeated blows in the head at that young of an age, like you said, when you're not even fully developed yet. You're still
and
developing.
It's important. And the states and the legislators, I mean, thanks to the NFL, because of the, you know, the lawsuits that were filed by the retired NFL players, and that was a very bright spotlight that was shown on the concussion problem. And because of that, things have snowballed, and everybody is on board, rightfully so, getting smarter. Currently, all 50 states and the District of Columbia have some sort of legislation governing how school districts are to care for concussions and the programs they have to have. I know here in New Jersey, coaches, nurses, athletic trainers, physicians all have a yearly requirement to refresh their concussion knowledge. The parents get a piece of paper every year in the physical packet, the pre-participation physical packet that they must sign, and the doctor examines the young athlete, and there's a paper in there explaining signs and symptoms of concussion, and everything that you could wish for is finally coming around on a lot of fronts, not every front. I mean, Rosemarie and I both know that there are a lot of youth sport programs out there that are still not on board, for lack of a better term, but the highly competitive high school middle school sports. You know, it's the old phrase, when in doubt, sit him out. If you see something
right.
you don't like, too bad. Sit him down for the day. Let someone check him.
I'm really glad to see that change in posture, just really glad to hear that change in posture, because it, you know, if we didn't learn by Muhammad Ali and the boxers a lot of years ago, which we seem to totally escaped us, you know, that there are other sports where you're taking direct blows to the head repeatedly over your career experience, you know, with the sport. I'm just so glad that they're really going the extra mile and having the continuing ed or the refresher courses as well as the questionnaire and sending out to the parents. I wonder if this acquaintance of mine ever got that sheet. I hope that, you know, she paid attention, or she obviously didn't at that particular time, but I hope that since then, and this was last year when this came up, I hope that they're really driving it home at the school that her kid was in, because the parents weren't educated, because it was treated differently when they were kids. And so they
well,
don't
you know,
like
I think,
anything
yeah,
of
the
it.
The issue, as Phil said, is we still have a long way to go. Right now, although all the states have and the District of Columbia have laws governing schools, they don't all have laws governing non-school sports. And the majority of our kids are not in school sports. They're in the rec club league sports, you know, in the recreation, soccer, hockey, lacrosse, all of that is not school-related. So right now, most of the states don't necessarily have a law that governs that, where most of our kids are, especially the young ones. Here in the state of New Jersey, we do have a bill now up. In fact, tomorrow morning I'll be testifying for that bill, where we are now trying to extend the same kinds of education, policies, and procedures for concussion to all youth sports, not just that are those that are school-related.
Excellent. Excellent.
And that's,
well,
and that's important, important, Kim, because one of the numbers that I saw was that, again, people say, well, you know, hey, Phil, what's all the noise about concussions? I mean, didn't we always have concussions? I mean, you know, they've got your bell rung and you got a ding. And they said, Phil, have you seen more concussions in the last 10 years? And the answer is, well, yes, one statistic is that in the last 10 years, concussions have increased by more than 50%. But at
wow.
the same time, as Rosemarie and I both know from our professional careers, a lot of that is simply because we're better at finding out what we're looking at now.
Right.
Well, there, you know, there is that factor as well as, yes, you're right, Phil, that, you know, we can diagnose it more, we're more aware of it because of the media coverage and sensationalism around it. But also, you've got to think about the following, and that is these generations now, more kids are starting sports earlier in their lives, like at age 5. They're doing sports year-round. There's no break. They get, you know, transferred in taxi by their parents back and forth. So they're in multiple sports year-round without a stop.
Mm-hmm.
And also
right.
girls are very active. So in a sense, there may very well be an outright increase in concussions because, look, when I was a child, there were fewer girls playing. You really didn't play
yeah.
you know, there weren't as many organized sports. You didn't play a sport seriously, if you did, till high school. So you weren't having subconcussive blows to your head year-round in multiple sports since age 5.
Mm-hmm.
So the climate has really changed in terms of the kind of pressure we put on our kids in sports. And look at the pressure. I mean, parents are out there. Sometimes they're more competitive than the children themselves out on
yes.
the field or court or ice. And so,
right.
you know, we have to really think about, are we vicariously living through our kids? Or are they really playing because they have a joy for it? And that's a question.
It's a good question.
Well, the
other
question. Thing, too, Kim, I played 4 years of college football. One play, 1 year, I got knocked out on the field. I mean, I was gone. I woke up on the sideline, and I have no idea how I got there. It took me 2 years to remember the play I was carrying the ball on.
Wow.
So that was a significant. Now, as we, Kim, which sport do you think produces the most of all the sports?
Football. Yeah, football. Yeah.
Football is still the king. But do you know what's second? Number of concussions, second sport.
Soccer?
Girls soccer.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Girls soccer
and,
is second
And the only reason
number.
It's girls soccer is because girls don't play football.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah, but people would have not put girls soccer second. I mean, they beat out ice hockey. They beat out wrestling. There's more concussions, second only to football, in girls soccer.
Right. Well, they're bouncing the ball off their head. But, Phil, you bring up a good point when you gave your own example. I see some of the audience has sent some questions anyway because I'm not unmuting the mics yet. But now you kind of answered it, but let's put it in question form. Do you have to lose consciousness to suffer a concussion?
No. The vast majority, probably 90%, do not lose consciousness. You might get that little momentary I saw stars thing, but that's very, very brief. But no, and as Rosemarie was saying earlier, you can get a concussion and not even hit your head. See, a lot of people say, well, I don't understand. I fell flat on my back. Why do I have such a headache? Because the force is transmitted. You don't have to hit your head, and you don't have to lose consciousness.
And you'll find that with motor vehicle accidents where people have whiplash injuries and sustained concussions from a motor vehicle accident. Or, for example, our military, whom I work with also, blast injuries. You can be near the area, and the pressure is what causes the concussion without having hit your head.
Right, right. Well, and I also heard someone say, and I'm not a doctor, but that it should have made more sense because, you know, the skull itself is like bars on the cage and your brain's kind of like jelly floating in there. So if you have those G-forces or whatever they are, whether it's the whiplash or the blow to the head or whatever it is that slams your brain against your skull, you know, getting a contusion or concussion is definitely a possibility, and I don't think that people knew that before. You know, when I was a kid, I think they thought that you had to lose consciousness, and so a lot of new knowledge has come from that and the fact that it doesn't have to be a direct blow to the head, but also, as you said, things like whiplash and those sorts of things. So there isn't really, I think you said in the beginning, Phil, when people want to know how long do concussions typically last, you mentioned something early on, but then why don't you guys both elaborate on that? Because sometimes, and both of you alluded to this, I'm just putting it in one question, people get to keep those residuals, you know, in the more case of the more severe concussion or repeated concussions or concussions that haven't been properly diagnosed.
Well, you know, we're learning more by the use of neuroimaging, and what we're finding, although we say that, oh, yes, most concussions resolve within 7 days or so, perhaps the obvious symptoms are gone. But now we're finding in neuroimaging and other modes that, for example, for kids, we know now that we've seen cerebral blood flow changes still affecting about a third of kids 30 days after a concussion. We've looked at soccer players with neuroimaging, and we still see different metabolites and enzymes in the brain that are still not quite right 30 days and longer out there, even though these players say they feel 100%. So there are residuals that might, and that may be part of why if you hit your head again, you may be much more susceptible to another concussion. So even though you may feel fine, it may not be a good idea to be out there doing contact risks so close in proximity to your concussion. And I think that's what people really need to think about.
And that's an extension of the earlier vision. How do you feel? How many fingers am I holding up? Okay,
right.
That was a very short time frame. So now everybody dealing with concussions is a little smarter. However, as Rosemarie just said, even our best, 7 to 10 days, 90% have resolved themselves. Even that may go back to the how many fingers am I holding up test and not be all that accurate after all. A recent study in the American Academy of Pediatrics said that recovery is doubled for every concussion after the first one.
Really?
So as Rosemarie was saying, by the time, especially in the young developing brain, because they don't handle as well as adults do, by the time you are completely, 100% fully recovered, Rosemarie and all the other clinic orgs, we have not yet quite figured out exactly how long that takes. We just know that you're in school. How's school? Not bad. How do you feel? Okay. Well, let's keep going. But one of the papers I have in my portfolio at school is after the athlete has returned to school and he's doing well, after he's returned to sports and he's doing well, I still worry about him. I have a piece of paper that is 2 to 8 weeks after they've returned. I give it to them and I ask them a bunch of questions because I don't want them to slip through the cracks, even if it's 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
With regard to residuals, too, that you asked about, we've done research that's been published in the Journal of Neurosurgery, two different studies. And what we found that even in students or individuals who are feeling normal, have no problems, what we looked at was their history of previous concussions. So we looked at those who had, let's say, one or maybe no concussions versus those who had two or more concussions. Totally healthy people, totally healthy high school kids, no problems otherwise. And on testing, we found that those who had two or more concussions were statistically significantly different on measures of attention and concentration, as well as in just symptom reporting like physical, emotional, cognitive, intellectual symptoms. So even though everyone looks fine, there are subtle changes that distinguish the groups. And that tells us that there may be a cumulative effect, even if it is a mild concussion.
Mm-hmm. And Rosemarie brings up a good point. If you read a lot of the literature, one of the main things that keeps coming up on prevent injuries, well, you really can't prevent them. I mean, a helmet's not going to prevent a concussion no matter what you do, but it's education. If you can educate people, go by the rules. Make sure your equipment fits properly. Don't do dangerous things. Good sportsmanship. Learn proper technique. Strengthen your neck muscles. So you do all the proper stuff. They did a study in the NFL, about 10 years ago. They asked the players, how many of you guys suffered a concussion? And the answer was about 5%. Then they listed all the things that are concussion-like, symptoms. How many of you guys had this, 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 or this? Well, once they knew what a symptom of a concussion was, the number went from 5% to 47%.
Wow.
So they might have suffered a concussion but never gave it that title because they didn't know how to describe a concussion.
Right. Right.
So that's where the education becomes critical for everyone, coaches, officials, physicians, athletic trainers, parents, athletes, everybody.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Well, let's see here. You already pretty much addressed, I had a few questions here. You pretty much addressed about how effective MRIs and CT scans are at measuring a concussion. They don't always pick up the signs and symptoms of a concussion, if I heard you guys correctly, until it's at a more critical state. But you just said some neuro scans, was it, Rosemary, that do better?
Which is only research-based at this point. It's not for routine use, and this is experimental research that's being done. Typically, the regular kind of MRI CT scan will not show anything, and it shouldn't show anything because it's the function of the brain that has changed as a result of this neuropathological process that's happening. And so there's no structure. Such as a lesion that you might have with an aneurysm or, a more serious bleed or some other kind of injury. But the research that's being done is on different other kinds of brain tests that are now being developed that are beyond the MRI or the CT scan, and they're only really for research purposes at this point, and that's where we're gaining more knowledge about the brain.
Wow. Well, it's amazing how much has been learned just in the pretty recent past. It hasn't been that long that a lot of these things have been enacted. So I am sorry for the NFL and our veterans. I, too, have a lot of veterans on the show. But certainly it's kind of made the world stand up and take notice, and some of these things get changed that were not a lot were known about them before, or they were minimized, I guess. One of the questions someone had was, and I think we answered that earlier, about concussions. Are they worse for teens and adults? But we decided the younger the kid, the worse for the concussion because of the developmental aspects?
Yeah, at this point, what we believe is that with regard to a developing brain, that youngsters seem to have more symptoms or at least a longer recovery period, and so they have to be dealt with much more cautiously than adults. And when we say that, we're talking about the developing brain, and what we know now is that the brain continues to develop till maybe age 23 or so. So adolescence has been extended beyond the teen years. And we need to be careful with the younger brains especially, and just much more cautious about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seems that, in cognitive and executive function and in school a lot of times, and you mentioned behavioral, Phil, those are the places that I really hear about a lot being a host where, kids, maybe they were able to sit down and they were voracious readers. And back when I was a kid, it was Nancy Drew or the Hardy Boys, right? So that's dating myself. But, you could sit down and read every volume of it. And now, suddenly they find when they have been a voracious reader that suddenly they keep reading the same sentence over and over and are lucky if they can get through a magazine article, let alone the kind of reading that they used to do in the past, or focus at school, used to be able to intently focus and take good notes on what the teacher was saying, and now not so much. I call it, when I do it on here and my audience knows it, when I bounce off track, every now and again I'll go something shiny, meaning something shiny, caught the side of my eye, and it just totally took my attention away from what I was doing, and then I lose the thought, or the memory. And luckily, I wasn't in school when mine happened. I hate to think of what that would have been like, to not be able to do what I was able to do when I was in school, and just think that would be so hard, because those school years obviously are going to set the tone for what the rest of your life is going to be like.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Kim. The the key phrase there is executive functions. Executive functions such as planning, organizing, problem solving are increasingly important as the student athlete moves through the high school level, but these functions are particularly vulnerable to concussion. So after a concussion, the high school student may be more likely to lose track of homework assignments, have difficulty planning how to approach a paper, tend to arrive in class without the needed materials. So that executive functioning, you know, comes into play on the high school age person, certainly college as well, of course. But that's when, you really have to work extra hard. And, you know, like Rosemarie and neuropsychologists, others that I know, some very good physicians I know, they really work with, and Rosemarie can speak to this, not tricks of the trade, but practices and habits to help them improve their executive functioning.
Right.
With a concussion, I want to reassure the listeners that most concussions resolve. They do resolve. So if you do the right thing and you follow what your doctor says, you'll recover. But there are a number that go into post-concussion syndrome with significant symptoms that last for a long time. And that's when you will need someone who can intervene in terms of making accommodations or helping you through the school process, or if you're an adult, through the work process also, cognitively as well as behaviorally and emotionally, because as you know, the brain affects everything, not just your cognition. It affects you physically, it affects you emotionally. Your brain is the number one engineer of your entire body. Now, with a mild concussion, you're not going to lose IQ points. You're not going to forget how to read or how to do math or anything like that. What will happen is it affects those skills that are most susceptible to concussion, which include memory, attention, concentration, reaction time, speed. So you're not as sharp. You may be more mentally foggy. You may lose track. You may not remember. You may seem confused at times. That is what is affected by concussion.
Right.
And as we all know, those difficulties get frustrating. Frustration produces its own set of dilemmas, and then if it gets out of hand, can start to be producing signs of depression. So it can walk away from you if you don't get a handle on it.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, yeah, the behavior problems seem to come behind it. When people don't get validated and they don't understand what's going on themselves, and things that used to come so easy are all of a sudden either not coming or they're a lot more difficult, it's hard. You know, I know that myself from the experience that I had, but I suppose when you're younger, well, I guess just because we're old doesn't mean we're mature, but I was going to say when you're younger and a little less mature and maybe haven't lived as much life to kind of see this going on, it's got to be very traumatic. So, you know, I know that a lot of people that suffer TBI also have some amount of PTSD just from that intense shock, frustration, and feeling of, I'm losing the word, but violated, you know, being violated in some way because you're not able to function on the same level that you were before. So, again, you know, I want to commend both of you. I have just a couple other questions, and then we'll see if anyone else has them, and I appreciate you guys coming on, but I really do appreciate this because I kind of wondered, you know, you now as a kid, as a little kid, my dad's a baseball fan, and we got the World Series, you know, here this weekend where I live, and we'll be going on Father's Day, and I could always see, you know, not that you can't get hurt in basketball or baseball. Of course, you can get hurt walking down the street doing anything. But when I was the youngest of kid, I would see football. So admittedly, I haven't always been the biggest football fan, but what it appeared to me, I remembered in college, in my heritage, actually, that football seemed like the modern-day version of the gladiators, the old Roman gladiators, you know, the way people just run into each other like that. And even as a kid, I seemed to have some kind of awareness, and I knew nothing about brain injury, hadn't had my own or anything else, but that clacking of helmets, you know, to the head, that just didn't seem like that was a very good idea to do that. And so they're doing some work. I know here at the University of Nebraska, the Cornhuskers and a couple other places in the country are doing some work that both of you might know about the electrodes and figuring out if there's some kind of a helmet that's going to serve the brain better than the ones that we have now. Do you guys know about those studies going on?
Well, they are using impact sensors and accelerometers to measure G-forces, to also to alert, let's say, people on the sideline as to when there's been a strong hit with a for a particular player, because, you know, if you're, and Phil knows this, if you're on the sideline and you're trying to watch your athletes, you cannot watch every single athlete at the same time. And
no.
So these helmets can send, the accelerometer or the impact sensor can send a message to the sideline, to an iPad or some other instrument, to alert the athletic trainer, whoever's on the sideline, to, hey, this player had a big hit, check them out, you know. It's really has been effective, especially in high school sports. However, it hasn't been standardized because the question is, the governing body for many of these helmets is called NOCSI. That's just an acronym. And if you add or change something on a helmet, if you add something to it, essentially you've now changed the, the safety regulations for that particular helmet. You know, it's been tested, it's certified. Whenever you do anything to a helmet and change it, that certification and those test results don't apply. So there's a lot going on in terms of research and how to make the better helmet, especially with the younger kids, who these helmets are quite heavy. Well, having a heavy helmet on your head, might that actually increase the probability of having a concussion? Because these young kids don't have strong necks. And so, you know, are their heads like wobbling around while they're trying to play football on the field? And so perhaps there should be more consideration as to the weight of the helmet and the size of the player. So there are many, many things that are being considered right now with regard to helmets.
And, Kim, you had an interesting point earlier. Kim, the analogy that a lot of us use when we speak to groups is that of an egg, the shell being the football helmet and the egg yolk being the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You can shake the egg around and not crack the shell, but you and I both know that the yolk inside will be scrambled.
So right.
Helmets were never invented. When they came along, they were invented to stop skull fractures. They were never intended to prevent a concussion. So, and right now, people and the market and being as it is, it's ripe for products or gimmicks or something. Not that everything is a gimmick, of course, but according to the 4th International Consensus Conference on Concussion in Sport, it concluded that the overall effectiveness of helmets, mouth guards, and other protective equipment, they found no statistical evidence of concussion risk reduction.
Really?
So is it a good idea? Are we gaining? Are we going in the right direction? Probably. Are we there right now? Doubtfully.
Well, there's also the argument that perhaps having helmets or better helmets produces athletes who think they can hit harder and play harder.
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's the question for women's lacrosse, for example, and other women's sports that are sports that don't wear helmets. The concern is if we have them starting to wear helmets, are they going to feel as if, you know, more invulnerable? And I believe there is a psychological sort of gladiator effect by getting all, for example, a little kid who gets all suited up in an ice hockey or football uniform feels like they can hit harder, they can bounce around, and they're not going to get hurt. That's
yes.
a real problem. And I think that's why now we have introduction of new ways to teach drills in, for example, football, where the practices may be without uniforms, without helmets, so that they can learn basic skills without in a safer way. And so there are some techniques now that are being and programs that are training coaches to use those techniques with kids to have practices where there's skill development, but they're not wearing a helmet. And this way they don't bang heads and lead with their heads and spearing, et cetera.
That's a very, very good point, Rosemarie. In fact, there's a couple of organizations, Pop Warner Football being one, the Ivy League football being another one, and the NFL. They've actually legislated, for lack of a better word, the number of contact practices allowed during the season.
Wow.
So they're reducing the number of head hits per year in those three organizations. And another athletic trainer and I actually did a study about 10 years ago, of girls lacrosse. Every school that has girls lacrosse on the high school level. And we were checking for head, face, neck injuries to see, were there enough that the National Federation for Girls Lacrosse should change the rules and make the girls wear helmets? And the answer was, no, there were not enough injuries. And the National Federation liked that answer because they liked the game being more of a skill game than a rock'em sock'em game.
Right.
So you're right. The helmet does produce a certain mentality of invincibility in every sport that wears helmets.
Kim,
yeah.
I'm going to have to go soon because I still have to prepare my testimony for tomorrow morning's legislation at the State House. So if you have any more questions, I'll stay on for a couple more minutes, but I will need to go.
Okay, no problem. I just do want to repeat for you, and then I'll just, let me see. If there's anybody out there who has any questions, the number's 424-243-9540. If you have any questions for Rosemarie, you can put up your hand. Otherwise, what I will just do, I want to go back to your, let me find your paper. I want to talk about your site again for just a minute. I mentioned earlier, for those of you who might have joined us late, this is Rosemarie Scolaro-Mosier, and she is author of a book called Ahead of the Game, The Parent's Guide to Youth Sports, and also in a documentary, The Smartest Team, shown on PBS and available at Amazon. Make sure to check out her website, and I'll type it in the chat room in a moment, but for those of you listening, sportsconcussionnj.com, or her own website at rosemariemosier.com, M-O-S-E-R. Thank you so much for taking your time tonight. Good luck tomorrow. I guess we have just one question, and we'll keep it brief and then let you go. Area code 803, you're on with Phil and Rosemarie.
Well, all right, it's nice to meet both of you. My name is Les Paul Morgan. I was listening where you're talking about the youth, and I see so many young people not wearing any kind of safety gear. There's where I live in North Augusta, South Carolina, there's this one boy that I see go flying through on rollerblades all over a paved parking lot, and he falls and he hits his knees and he almost his head yesterday. I said, think first, think first. There's a program called Think First, and he said, what are you talking about? We got talking, and I got him out on his helmet, well, I mean with his helmet and his rollerblades and his knee pads on for a couple of days, and then he took them back off. What can you do to get people to wear the proper safety gear when it is proper, and when it, especially with young people, to make them think it's cool when it is the right thing to do?
Well, one thing to do is get legislation going. So I don't know if you have a bike safety law, but kids have to have bike helmets in New Jersey. They have to wear them. And so if you can get, you know, someone to legislate, like, you know, one of your local assembly people or whatever, to congressman, whatever, to legislate for the state at least to make a law. The other is to work with your school to see, okay, I'm sure your school has a concussion policy. Ask them about it, and then they have to start educating the kids in class, in school, so the kids will learn. Not only kids, but parents. Have, you know, see if they can have a parents' night or an after-school program or even a during-school health gym, you know, during gym,
that's
some
a great
sort
idea.
Of, you know, so you the kids can see what it, they're supposed to be doing. What is a concussion? In fact, a lot of kids, as, you know, Phil was saying before, don't even know what it is, so they wouldn't even report if they had one. So education, knowledge, talk about it is really important. Really important.
Well, I hope your hearing, is it a congressional hearing, you said? Hope it goes
it's
well
for
you.
It's actually a state. It's a state hearing.
Oh, okay, state hearing.
State.
Well, I hope
yeah.
it
well,
goes
well for
the other
thing
you.
To, the other thing to consider, too, is if, I mean, skateboarding is a very popular activity. If you are actually a very busy skateboard site, well, then check with someone such as your Parks and Recreation Department to see if they would be willing to construct quality and challenging skateboard pipes, tubes, half tubes.
See, that's why I called in. Thank you.
and if they construct it, then they rule who gets to do it and what they have to wear while they're doing it. So if they want quality places to skateboard, then you got to follow the rules, which includes helmets, knee pads, and elbow pads. So if it becomes...
And, the other thing, Phil and I are both part of the Brain Injury Alliance of New Jersey. So I'm sure your state has either a Brain Injury Alliance or a Brain Injury Association.
I'm on the board of the Brain Injury Association.
Well, there you go. What are you guys doing? What are you guys doing about this?
Oh, we're doing a lot of things. We've got a lot going on, and it's a lot of injury prevention. But I didn't hear some of the same things I've heard you say, so it's nice to hear someone else's perspective.
So you might start a committee on, you know, children and TBI, traumatic brain injury, or a sports concussion committee. You might already have a sports concussion committee and get them activated in terms of a grassroots network so they can go out to schools, they can provide information, they can have special events for kids to bring their skateboards. We just did in our town, actually I've done two so far, two different towns, a bike safety event or a bike rodeo or a wheels rodeo. So everybody's invited to bring, you know, come with your rollerblades, your skateboards, your bikes, and we have sponsors and we have food and the police department runs it. And then we make sure that everybody has helmets, the helmets are fitted well, et cetera. And kids love to come out to those things.
That
sounds there's
great.
There's a good answer. Create an event that is appealing, prizes or whatever, local police, parks and recreation, but create an event that kids will want to come to and they can only participate if they're dressed appropriately. Then it becomes the habit, becomes the norm. Then you've got them.
That's cool. I'm glad I called in to speak to you. Thank you.
You betcha.
Thank you. All right, good night, guys, because out here on the East Coast, it's Let's see. What it's 11:14.
11:14 my time, too.
That's right. You're up listening. I'm really impressed. All right. Take care, and thank you so much for having me on the show. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Good luck tomorrow.
Good night.
Good luck tomorrow,
Rosemary.
Good night.
Good night, Phil.
Good night, Rosemary. Bye. Okay, Phil, why don't you tell us real quick, and I know you're that direction too, so, Les, it looks like I lost, he dropped off the board too. He went with us.
Oh, boy. I thought
okay.
I heard a second click, but I wasn't sure.
You did. That was Phil Hostler. And as I mentioned, I think that was really all I was going to ask. The last thing was just how did he and Rosemary meet? And they met because they're both on the board of their alliance. And so they're both a great couple of guests because you wondered, you know, like what you were saying, Les, you know, that you're noticing, I notice the same thing here about kids doing sports, that rollerblading and skateboarding and all that, and there isn't any kind of protective garb, and I think those were some really good suggestions.
I just cringe when I see these kids go flying through on these cement and brick barriers around them, and, I mean, their bodies are just flying towards those things. I see someone getting seriously hurt, and so I appreciate you having these guests on tonight.
No problem. I've got this. I wondered about. I'll tell you later. I'll mention it later. But yes. Anyway, I think that was really wonderful. So. Tonight, I do want to thank Phil Hostler. He has been inducted into 4 Halls of Fame as an athletic trainer and written 5 books and 39 articles in the healthcare field. So also traveled with Olympic-level teams 4 times to South America and Europe. And so maybe we'll have him come back again and talk about that experience and some of the articles he's written and the books he's written. And again, want to thank Rosemary Scalaro Mosier, PhD, author of Ahead of the Game, The Parent's Guide to Youth Sports, and the documentary The Smartest Team on PBS. They were wonderful guests, and I know that we're all relieved here to know that, you know, that this whole field is progressing, because I think a lot of us, like you and me, Les, who went a long time without being adequately diagnosed or understood, you know, they just didn't have this kind of knowledge. And to hear the kind of things that are coming up now, you know, primarily probably because of the stink in the NFL and then the veterans coming home, it kind of made a perfect storm kind of situation to bring in a brain injury into the spotlight. And I'm happy to know that they're starting at a young age and grooming people to live their life a little more safely, or to at least be educated enough to maybe, I was going to say understand, but, you know, a lot of kids always want to try anything on their own, you know. But
when you said that, I thought of smart choices. You know, it gives you a chance to make smarter choices.
Yes.
By hearing this.
Absolutely. Yes, and, you know, knowing what consequences can be, because, you know, then you're making, it's a free choice kind of thing, you know, at least you realize possible repercussions of risk-taking behavior, you know, which is really what some of that skateboarding where they go, we've got one of those, I don't know what they call them, but it's a concrete place where people go to skateboard, but, you know, they go way up in the air and kind of flip over. And, you know, I looked at that. It scared the heck out of me. I was looking at that, and I thought, good God, you know, if you – and they do, you know, their skateboards go out from under them all the time, and they get beamed on the concrete.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, there, I think – yes,
I was
please,
just going to say there are also trainings in learning how to fall. Did you know that? Learning how to fall safer. When I raced my motorcycle, I had a very high-powered racing motorcycle. I mean, you get on that thing, start it up, and you can go from zero to about 70 in just, well, it seemed like 1 second. It might be 2 seconds. But, I mean, it was so powerful. If I didn't hold on to the handlebars and grip it, it could literally throw me off. And I had to learn how to fall on it and learn how, and there are better ways to learn how to fall and know when to let go of the handlebars on a dirt bike, a motocross
racing
bike.
Now, that's really interesting, because I know the National Safety Council, for one, is doing a program on fall prevention, but I don't think I've ever heard of one on how to fall better if you're going to fall. Is that the old tuck and roll thing? Or
It's kind of like... I mean, I raced very, very powerful, very fast motorcycles, and I jumped way up in the air. I used to jump 30 and 40 feet in the air and do stunts. I was probably about 19 when I did that, and I thought I was invincible, didn't know what brain injury was. And, I mean, I would build jumps out in the woods and practice on them for hours and hours. And sometimes as I got in the air, the motorcycle comes out from under me and said, oh, no, and I see the ground coming at me fast. And I would literally push myself away from the motorcycle and roll as I went to hit the ground. And I never got hurt. I never had a broken bone, nothing. And, I mean, I did some dangerous-looking jumps.
I wonder where a person
sometimes.
Can learn that. How did you learn? Did you find that out on your own, or how did you learn how to fall right?
I just experimented around on my own. It was something I just learned. I studied how things work in science. I really did. I always wondered how things like that were. What's the law? I'm trying to say the law. Every equal action, there's an opposite reaction that's equal to it. I'm trying to say it.
I know what you mean.
Pushing it away pushes you away from it. And if you think that thing's going to fall and crush you, you better get away from it before you hit the ground. And I learned that at an early age because I had one go flipping over me and it hit me on the legs and bruised me all over. I mean, really bad. And my mom, when I came dragging myself home, said, Les Paul, you ever get on that thing again, I'm going to spank you. And she said, not really, but I'm mad at you, because she had to take me to the doctor. I was bleeding.
Oh, no.
She said, don't you know how to stop? I was not afraid to ride that crazy thing. It's like getting on a horse and putting rocket motors on it. It was just super powerful. But I'm not doing it to brag. I did a bunch of crazy things when I was young, but I learned how to fall better. It's hard to explain. Like on a motorcycle, when you're making a sharp turn, you lean into the turn. The thing I don't like about four-wheelers, a lot of kids, when they get on, they make a turn real fast, and it'll throw them off to the right if you're making a left turn. On a dirt bike, if you're making a sharp left turn, you lean into the turn to the left real sharp and floor it instead of go slow. And I know that from, I can feel it like I'm riding my motorcycle when I'm saying that, if you can tell.
Wow.
I mean, I had a lot of accidents. I never broke a single bone in my life. The only bone that's been broken on is the one they saw it on in my brain when they did the operation.
I was going to say, a muscle. Just over and over and over again. You didn't need any broken bones, buddy. I'm going to park you just a second, if you don't mind. And I'm going to bring everybody on right when I come back, but I need to have a green tea moment for those of you that know what that means. We're in the open mic section of the show, open mic and indie music section. I want to thank This is what I couldn't spit out earlier. I want to thank our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, and thank Lash Publishing for sponsoring Recovery Now. I'll have a public service announcement when I come back, but you can call in 424-243-9540 or toll-free if you're in the U.S., 855-473-3711, or free outside the U.S., you can call into the show, 202-559-7907. So while you guys are doing that, I'm going to play just a quick tune, and then I'll come back and open the mics. It's been really hot here, and I've had a lot of movement. We've been moving into our new house, and the moving van is coming at 7:30 in the morning, and my husband just had his first awakening. I'll tell you in a little while it wasn't funny the other day, but a meltdown that I had, and he's very calm and even keeled, and just about 20 minutes before I came on the show, he lost it. He went down the basement. He said, "Oh my God, we're just not ready. We're just not ready. Oh my God, we're just not ready." So it's been really, really crazy, and I've been drinking a lot of tea, and now I've really talked too long. So I'll be right back with you guys. Let's see. I'm going to play this song because it's true. I'll see you soon. 3 minutes and 49 seconds. This is Kevin Harrison out of New York. And I'll be right back.
But there ain't no use looking back. Today might not seem fair, but it's all we'll ever have. So live each day as if it were yours. Never know when it might be. And if that day seems to come too fast, I know you're watching over me. My friends will always remember all the memories we had. We'll laugh and cry and sing about the good times and the bad. You're always with us, in our hearts and in our souls. Never said, but there
ain't no use looking back, don't look back. Today is never fair, but it's all we'll ever have.
Kevin Harrison with See You Soon. If you want to check him out, we don't hear a lot about him. You can go to facebook.com/Kevin Harrison Music or his website, kevinharrisonmusic.com. So now I'll open some mics. Oh, yes, wait. I will open the mics in just one moment. Got a public service announcement here from Lori Purdy Fatel. She's one of our earlier hosts. In fact, she was on before me tonight. So is that, let's see, I don't even know what day that is. She must be the second and fourth Wednesday of each month, just before this show. And she is very involved with the, excuse me, peer support number. And she sent out this memo. Do you know someone who has suffered brain injury, concussion, contusion, closed head injury, traumatic brain injury, acquired brain injury, anoxia, hypoxia, dementia, tumor, stroke, aneurysm, amnesia, Parkinson's, brain cancer? A survivor support line is now available to provide telephone support to those who suffer from all levels of brain impairment. Excuse me, folks, I got a frog. 4Peer11 is a survivor-run, funded, operated, and managed emotional helpline. We do not give medical advice, but we do have two compassionate ears. We have survived some form of brain injury, or we are a survivor who is significant in the life of another survivor. The number to call is 855-473-3711 or 855, the number 4, Peer, P as in Paul, E-E-R, 1-1. Live operators are available from 9 to 9 Pacific Standard Time. If a call comes when an operator is not free, please leave a message. Messages are returned on a regular basis. Again, that number is 855-473-3711. And then the other announcement you guys are all starting to hear is to check out braininjuryradio.org. A lot of you know that we've been in the process of making our own studio instead of broadcasting from Blog Talk Radio as we have. Before too long, we're still going to be on Blog Talk Radio, but instead of broadcasting from, there'll be one of the many places we're broadcasting to. And so you'll want to go to braininjuryradio.org at your leisure, just preparing you for the future. Get a username and password, and you're going to find the information on all the brain injury related functions under this umbrella, like the 4Peer11, the tab for Brain Injury Radio, how to start a support group, all kinds of information that we've dealt with separately is all going to be under one umbrella. And you'll be able to access our shows that way too by just clicking on the Brain Injury Radio tab. So be ahead of the curve on this and go to braininjuryradio.org and make sure to get yourself a username and password. That'll be the only way that you'll be able to access and participate in the chats and so forth. So I think that's the end of my announcements, and I'll bring Les back on. And I think this might be Allie. Is this you?
Yes, it is. Hello, everyone.
Hello,
hi.
Allie.
Welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Good to see you.
Hi. Thank you so much. It's good to be seen and heard. Thank you. That was a really great interview with great information and quite
Wasn't
timely
it?
And riveting, yes. And that's why you asked some excellent questions. And my brain is tired, and I'm tired, and I almost feel like I've got stuff going on. But I'll try to post my question in a succinct way that's decipherable. First and foremost, Les Paul, you were talking about Newton's third law of physics, and for every action,
thank
there's
you.
An equal and opposite action. Yeah.
I was too tired to say it myself.
I love physics. I know. Isn't it amazing how sometimes your brain just goes on the fritz? It's just like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I can't help you.
I was trying to say it, and it just would not come out right. I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome.
I couldn't
You're
think
welcome.
Of it either.
And,
I knew what he was talking about,
yeah,
but I knew you'd know.
Mm-hmm. And I thought I would save everyone the temptation of trying to jump into a research project once we get off the phone. So I figured I just wanted to supply the information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know how I did that. You're welcome.
Huge.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know, because I didn't get a chance to ask the question, for those unregulated, like, pocket rockets or whatever you call them, unless you know more than I would, like the ATVs or
there's ATVs, the
moped.
The
what's right up from the moped? Yeah, those motorcycles is not quite like a motorcycle, but it is a motorbike and is not quite docile as like a moped. It's like a racing bike. Yeah, so for those types of bikes, especially in urban areas, a lot of times, especially when the weather gets warm and when summer hits for sure, you see all these kids out on bikes, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, and I launch into almost this quasi-panic mode where I'm wanting to just hit the streets canvassing folks and
me too.
Really educating
today.
Them. I know, right, on fall prevention and the dangers of concussion and acquiring a brain injury as a result of traumatic means and all sorts of things. I'm thinking, well, where's the opportunity there to educate people who this clearly is not an organized sport, it's not affiliated with a school nor a recreation center or anything like that. Do you all have any ideas as to perhaps how we can get the word out and help to educate? I don't know. I'm just...
Well, one of the first things I do is I revert to think first. I'll say the words think
mm-hmm.
first, because that's not
mm-hmm.
just a slogan. It's an actual program that
sure.
had a guest on from Think First. It's been several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have him back
mm-hmm.
on one of my shows because
mm-hmm.
they talked all about Think First safety prevention. Think first before you get on your bicycle, make sure you have your safety gear. Before you get on your dirt bike, make sure you have read your manual and studied the laws of physics of motorcycle racing, like I was describing it a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the laws of physics. It really is. You have to really learn
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
feel of that thing. And
mm-hmm.
a motorcycle shop or a ATV dealer, it's mandatory that some of them do training before they
mm-hmm.
buy them, but not everywhere. And in my neighborhood where I live, it's
mm-hmm.
in a rural area, and I saw one of those,
mm-hmm.
what you were just talking about, go flying through my neighborhood today, and I'm saying, wow, he wasn't looking at all.
Yeah.
I was about to turn out in the road, and he ran right in front of me. It was a young boy,
mm-hmm.
looked like he was about 12.
But out of helmet, wasn't wearing a
yeah.
helmet. Mm-hmm.
He had, I call that riding naked, and that's what he was doing. He
yeah.
didn't have any safety, anything on. And I'm saying, oh, man, that
wow.
in the year 2014, when we're supposed to know all this stuff automatically, they're still
mm-hmm.
doing it. And then I saw his dad riding with him. Both of them had no helmets on. I'm going, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking,
yeah.
if I go talk to him, he might punch me out. I don't know. But I said, hey, man, wear your helmet. Don't forget to wear your helmet. Okay. And it, like, oh, yeah, right.
In but one ear and out the other. Yeah.
But I did get some kids starting to wear their helmets in my neighborhood on their bicycles and on their rollerblades and all kinds of different things, because I sat down and had a long discussion with this young boy. And I like him a lot. I talk with him now a lot when I'm outside. And he says, hey, Lastball, how you doing? I say, how's your helmet doing? You got your safety gear. And I say it not trying to be a pest. I'm sure to kids we might sound like a pest saying things like that, because I know when I got my first dirt bike, it was a beautiful yellow Indian dirt bike when I was 11 years old. It was came off the back of an El Camino, and I'm going, wow, I can't believe this.
Wow.
And it was a beautiful dirt bike. You just didn't see Indian dirt bikes. And he says, whoa. Hello, little brother. He came all the way from California with it on the back of his El Camino. And read this book. It was a safety book on motorcycle safety. From front to back, I had to read it at least 3 times before he would let me ride it. And I said, I can't ride it now.
Awesome.
It took me all night and all the next day to read that book, and then he did a test. That really protected me. That was in the 70s when they didn't have to do that.
Now that's going to bug me to think of what that scooter's called. My husband's sister has one of those.
Okay.
Dang it.
What does it look like? Maybe if you describe it, it'd help
us. A Vespa?
Us.
Are you talking about like a type of
scooter?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, Vespa.
Gee, for a tired brain, you've sure got all the tough questions tonight. What's that worth? For $200,
I know.
I was trying to go to the theory of a while ago, and you just answered it right away, Allie. So, and my brain is worn out. So you win the worn out brain award tonight.
I'm gonna.
What were you gonna say, Kim?
Well, only that I keep muting my mic. I also see that someone I haven't talked to for quite a while is on the board, but you guys have, I don't know if you're hearing, but boy, I sure am. When there's sure a difference when Gary's up and when he's asleep. The dogs are just barking like crazy. Libby is going insane. I played this moving thing has not only had me discombobulated, because at the new place that tomorrow we'll be sleeping in, this is our last night here. It's been full of contractors, and some of you know that I play some of his music on the board here. And Les, I got to tell you that I haven't talked to them 2 days ago, so it was a full 2 days ago. The day before that, so 3 days ago, that would be right. I freaked out the way Gary is right now. I went down our basement and realized, oh, my God. And I've been pretty cool through this whole thing. But for the first time, I was so jazzed because I looked around our basement, which is twice the size of, 2.5 times the size of where we're going. And I realized there was no way we are going to be able to fit all of our stuff in. And so we were over at the house, and I had been getting really, really, really frustrated with the contractors. I feel like there was an old joke I remembered that, how can you tell when an alcoholic's lying? And the answer is their lips are moving.
Lips are moving.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about the contractor. He kept making excuses. And I found myself thinking, it's a good thing I haven't moved the 38 over here yet, because I would just want to be clawing your eyes out. I hate you. You know, I mean, I was just freaking out. So Gary and I were in the empty bedroom looking around where we're going to put this and that, and the carpenter was in the next bedroom over. And I said to Gary, I am totally freaking out. I said, there is no way. I said, I've got to get a hold of disabled vets And I'm going to try selling a couple things on, they've got, instead of a garage sale now, they've got these pages on Facebook a girlfriend told me about. I said, I'm going to spend, you know, some time trying to sell a few things at giveaway prices. And the rest, we're going to have a huge donation Friday morning for the disabled vets. And they're one of the few that still come and pick up. And he said to me, he was very calm then, unlike tonight. And he was calm. He looked at me and he said, don't worry, we'll just move everything over and then go through it. And I just burst into tears and started screaming. And I said, we've been doing this for 2 months. There's no fucking, excuse me, there's no freaking way I'm going to take all of this stuff, move it over, and spend the next 2 months like I've spent the last 2 months. It ain't happening. And I just started sobbing. And he kind of had tried to kick the door shut with his foot, but you could hear me a mile away. I was just, I mean, all that pent up for the last 2 months, and I was just, what? I mean, I was so upset. I was just in tears. And so he said, then he's understanding the gravity here, and he says, I think you need to go home, you know, go home. And so I did, and I haven't been there for the last 2 days until today, but when I got home 2 days ago, I texted a note to the contractor, and I said, see, they were supposed to be done the first. That's part of it. And we're moving tomorrow. And so they were still there, you know, and planning on working, I think, while our movers were coming on Thursday. And I wound up texting him Monday night, and I said, you've got until tomorrow afternoon, and this is another thing, they've accumulated drywall dust, it's like snow, so we hadn't been able to move anything into the house. It's filthy, full of dust, and they never threw away their garbage every day or even once a week. It was all accumulating in our garage and then getting tracked through the house. Now my painter, another one on our indie playlist, John Cruz, not related to the contractors, but in the house working. Now, John, every time he worked, he was fastidious. He went in there, laid down papers through the house, and painter taped them down, and cleaned all of his materials at the end of the day. He really cleaned up behind himself and then started over the next day. These other guys, slobs, and always with an excuse about something. And so after I have this blow up, I take a few breaths, and on, I think it might have been Sunday night, I said, but it was really late, I said, I have three things I need from you. I need you to have every single bit of garbage out of my basement, my garage, and my house. I need to have your bill, and I need to have you gone at whatever stage of completion you're at by the end of Tuesday. Gone.
Well.
Gone. Totally gone.
Wow.
Did your biggest author, can they deliver on that, or what? What was their response?
They did. Gary told me, well, he told me to stay home for a couple days, which I did, and I did sell a number of items on that Facebook deal, and I've got a big donation for the disabled vets on Sunday Friday morning, and then Friday afternoon, and we really aren't ready. We're going to be moving, and when I'm done with the show tonight, I'm going to be moving more, and then we do this move on Thursday, and on Friday I've got a meeting I've put off about 59 times during this process, so bad timing, but I've got to be gone most of Friday. And then at 4:00 in the afternoon Friday, our buyer wants to do their walkthrough. Oh my God, you know, and we're not even going to have had much time to clean up.
You can't find yourself, can you?
Mm-mm. Wow. And then Monday they close on their house. Tuesday we close on ours, which will be a grand relief because we've, you know, put out a lot of money for these contractors and painters and all that, and we've kind of been fronting ourselves till the house closes. So I'll be really relieved after tomorrow and after Tuesday. I'll be the most relieved. But I didn't go to the house, and they did do that. And Gary said that he was afraid of, not Gary wasn't afraid of me, but the contractor was. And so he said that they were working like they had a fire lit under their tush. And not the contractor, of course. He wasn't getting his hands dirty, but he was making sure everyone else was working. And they got down to where there's just a little painting that needs to be done in the basement. And John did that today, and he's going to do it a little bit tomorrow out of the way of where the movers are. Him I'm not worried about, but the other ones, after 3 weeks, talk about sensory overload and chaos. The more chaotic it got here at home with everything being out of sorts, you know, in boxes everywhere and can't find anything. And the dogs are really, really freaking out because they're wondering where all the stuff is going and why we're never home. And even when we are home, we're not present. You know what I mean? And they've been very, very upset. And so today, Libby, the one who's been barking, they have two big toy boxes. They're rather spoiled. And she brought a toy and was squeaking it in my face, one of her favorites, and I took it. And she looked so alarmed. And she doesn't know it, but I got them, she chewed a hole in one of their toy boxes. And so I took that toy away from her and went and got a garbage bag, and I filled it with all the toys from that box. And she was getting more and more and more freaked out by the moment. And then I took it outside, and she was like, I mean, if they weren't all bummed before, they were really bummed, wondering where the toys went. But see, I bought them a new toy box and a new bed that are set up at the house for when they get to go there tomorrow. They'll see familiar things.
Taking all their toys.
Yeah, right now I'm not a good mom, but tomorrow when they all come to their new house, they're going to say, oh, our toys, they are here. And they're going to see some familiar things in an unfamiliar spot and start understanding that we're moving. Now, Mario, the miniature wiener dog, he's 12, and he's actually been to 3 different homes with me. And Sophie, the 10-year-old teacup poodle, this is her second home, so hopefully she'll be able to tell Benny and Libby, this is that thing again where our life gets turned upside down and we get a new yard to discover and go play in. And the whole reason for that story is my friend that I haven't seen for a while on the board, I saw him, and it reminded me, where's my glasses? Oh, here they are. They're on my head. We'll see. Okay, so here's one for my buddy. While Libby's out there barking, I'm going to play not the first one on my playlist, who's frightened to death of me, not the second one, who I love to death, and John, who's been there and will be there again tomorrow and has done a lot. He held me by the collar a couple of times as I was about to go claw the contractor's face off. John kind of caught me by the collar. He could see it. And, of course, a lot of you know John has an inoperable brain tumor, and he's just starting to some of the things we go through, you know, the emotions and the forgetting things, and he could just tell that I was losing it, and he's been very comforting, and I feel very grateful that he was there, or Guido and Vito might have been doing some kneecap action here in the last couple days. But this is for my third buddy on the playlist, who I haven't seen for a long time, and we'll be right back and maybe be able to say hi to him. He's usually working now, but haven't seen him for a while and have missed him. This is Alan Kitto with Passing Through.
You ready to go? Come on, Woodwack. Let's go, boy.
Used to have a family, paying union dues, working all day on construction crews. When I lost my tools, then the whistle blew. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. Leave my home and family was on the lonely road. Signs kept telling me far away place to go. Winds changed my destiny, how was I to know? Can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I followed the yellow brick road to the end of a rainbow. A woman standing there, living on the dole. She looked away and said, this road has a heavy toll. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I've been wandering aimlessly in this wilderness. 15 years behind me, supposed to be my best. Need a light to see, guide me to my rest. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I'm only passing through.
Yay, Alan. Are you out there, Alan? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm here at the recording station.
You are?
Yeah. Brett is a musical genius on the level of George Martin from England, and then on the West Coast, Quincy Jones. He's right
wow.
in the middle of the two. He's a musical genius. He's recorded all my songs.
And you're at the studio now? What you doing?
Yeah, we're just hanging out. He's what are you doing with this? He's got new software, and he's editing some video that he's taken. He does videos.
Cool.
He does videos. He does all kinds of music. He writes music for commercials and movies and things like that.
Oh, I think you had me talk to him on the phone one time. Give him my
yeah.
regards. That's cool.
Okay.
Well, that's a fun place to hang out on hump night. How are you doing anyway? Yeah. I haven't talked to you for a while.
Well, last night we had our head injury meeting, and I forgot all about it. And
That's the risk of having a head injury.
I made the last 45 minutes of it, and one thing I'm very scared of is forgetting my name before I turn it age 62. My memory is really going bad.
Yeah, I know how that is. Well, you know, you got to, it is scary. But, you know, you got to take those other things into account, too. I mean, our injury is one and our age is one. But, you know, the old hungry, angry, lonely, tired, there's a lot of things that play into that memory being even worse than we think it is, you know, when we're pressing the envelope a little too hard. But, but anyway, pleasantly surprised and happy to see your number come up on the switchboard. So I just wanted to say hi. So being the animal lover you are, you probably know how bummed out and confused my dogs are about now with their whole house getting packed up. They're like, no, please don't pack us. Don't leave us, you know.
Mm-hmm. Last week I tuned in Thursday thinking that I would be hearing you, and I heard a different voice, and I thought, I wonder if Kim quit. And then after he signed off, I thought, oh, no wonder I got the wrong night. So I did
I signed in
last week, but on the wrong night.
Well, that would have been fantastic, Frank, and he's a good host too, but I'm the hump night host. Just remember that on Wednesdays, the hump night host.
Yeah, that lady was from New Jersey, huh?
Yes, she is, and so was he. They're both from the East Coast, and he's with a high school in New Jersey, and she's a doctor.
I did my my basic training in Fort Dix, New Jersey. I really
did
liked
you?
It. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that was 34 years ago.
They have a funny accent there.
Uh-huh. That was 34 years ago, so I forgot everything about that place, and although it was a real good experience.
Well, that's good.
I enjoyed it.
You know, I do that too. Sometimes I don't remember details, but I remember my impressions. You know, whether I got a good feeling from it or a bad feeling, but I can't really, you know, run down the detail kind of stuff.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, Kyra helps me out every once in a while, and she helps me with my memory, and then I got my parents. They help me with my memory sometimes too.
Sure.
So that helps me out a lot.
Well, that's
so good. I'm hanging in there. I've been playing piano about every other day at places in the town, so that really helps me out too.
Oh, good. You blowing any mouth harp? I like your harmonica in that song, but you play piano great too, and you write your music and your lyrics. You're just... You have so many talents, like the artist I'll play in a couple of minutes. He does all the instruments and stuff, too.
Wow.
That's a real gift.
God bless him. Yeah, I don't play my mouth harp there, but I it's a sing-along. I have the people sing along with me. That's what I do.
Okay.
Today I was playing my piano, and people are singing along. So that's what I enjoy the most, is sing-alongs.
Oh, that's fun. Now, Les likes that, too. Les likes the karaoke. And so, you know, he likes to do sing-alongs with people, too, and they do that at support meetings and when he goes out to have fun and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Great
Very
time.
Cool.
I just really enjoy it. Anyways, Kim, God bless you for this helping us head injured people out. God bless you.
Oh, well, thank you. God bless you. It's so good to see you. I'll park you, and I'm going to bring some other people on the line. I'll bring you back on the line, too, and just wanted to let you know that it's good to, really good to hear you. See ya.
Okay, God bless you in the new home. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, I got one other person with a question, but the person that I didn't kill that held me back from killing the other, going to play a quick song and then I'll bring you on for the rest of the time, folks. And this is called "And I Am So Glad He Was," or "There Might Have Been Body Parts Strewn in My New Backyard." This is "By My Side" by a really kick booty painter and, as you'll hear, an awesome artist, John Cruz.
But there's no one but
dynamite blues singer, John Cruz. You can check him out at CREWS at johncruzblues.com or facebook.com/johncruzblues. Or if you want to listen to more of his music, or even better yet, buy it. He has mounting medical bills from his VA experience with his brain tumor. You can go to ReverbNation/JohnCruzBlues and maybe buy a tune or two. But I have been so grateful that he and the angels have been in my corner and the contractor's been in the other. And I may play one of his, even though, I'm happy because he's done and gone, and things look nice. But, boy, that sensory overload will really get your motor running. I know you're filling in the blank, Les. Area code 509, you had your hand up. Who do we have here? You're on the air. 509.
Hello?
Yes, did you want to say hello to the world?
So you're moving, are you? Or
tomorrow, the moving van is coming.
Yeah. So how are you? I was just listening. I haven't been able to tune. I've been so busy, but my week, my fiscal year is almost over, you know, as far as the actual work. So it's a good thing. And the five. Yeah, we're going to be doing a show. The next show will be on the 5.
Really? Okay.
Uh-huh. Have you seen anything about the 5 yet?
No. What is that?
Oh.
I've been totally
immersed.
You'll
have to wait and see. Yeah, well, when you come back up for air, yeah, I'm not quite sure what it is. Hey, look, it's a plane. No, it's a train. The 5.
It'll be... A surprise, the 5. Okay.
It is.
Cool.
Yeah, they're gonna cause problems, I hear. 6 problems, or I can't remember what it was they're gonna do, but they're gonna do something from what I understand.
God.
So what got me to call in was your one man band. I lost his name. The guy he's from Nebraska too. Alan, I hope he's still on, because we were talking. He called in on the youth show one time, and it was a couple months ago, and he said he might be wanting to come camping. I hope he can come camping, because, yeah, we got a camp cook, we got the camp, you know, we got everything. We don't have a band.
Alan, are you on the phone still?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Alan.
Hi.
You remember Craig?
No, I don't. What about Craig now? I'm sorry.
A couple of shows ago, it was actually on a Saturday, and it was Dustin and Ty's show, and I was on there, and we were talking about brain injury camp. You remember that?
Yep, I do.
Okay.
I was in Minnesota at the time.
Right. You were traveling, and camp's coming up. It's like 39 days to camp, and if you can come, it'd be awesome to have you.
Where's it at again?
It's a ways. It's North Skookum. Go to braininjury.camp.
Okay. Where's the camp that I forgot?
It's on the Idaho-Washington border.
Oh, yeah. Idaho's very beautiful.
It is.
I've been to Idaho.
Yeah, we have the entire campground. It's one of them that have been leased from the Indians to the family, and so it's a pretty clean area. You know, none of the seaweed and stuff, because, you know, it's a smaller lake, so they don't have the big motorboats to pollute it. So it's, you know, undeveloped and pristine and no cell service, so you disappear back into time for the week.
Brain Injury Camp.
Brain Injury dot camp.
Dot camp. Okay, I got that.
Tonight.
And pick
I'll
me
up
on
tonight.
Your way, Alan. On your way
What's
up
that?
There for the, on your way up to camp, what? Pick me up.
No, you got to pick me up because I live west of you. Remember?
Okay.
You know, 30 years ago, I actually went out to Washington with two single women for Army. I was in the Army, but they weren't interested in me, so it was a very uneventful. Darn it.
But you went with two of them. You got two of them to go with you.
Yeah, I was like, ho hum, what was your name again?
Well, we all have our moments of that, don't we?
Anyways, I'll look that up, braininjury.camp.
Correct, and that's July 21st to the 27th.
Great, that sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful.
That sounds fun, doesn't it, Alan? That would be very fun. So in Idaho, they have potatoes. So do you guys do potato sack racing or potato fights or anything?
If you come, we'll do that if that's what you want to do.
As long as we don't bounce them off each other's head. We can't do that at Brain Injury Camp with
potatoes.
Actually,
we're more sophisticated. In our schools, we did it. We call it a three-legged race, and we just use duct tape.
Okay. Oh, no, that's fun. God, you do all the fun stuff. Are you going to cut books open like you do? I still want to do
that. That would be an interesting workshop. See, you got to come. I will make that a workshop. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have a real good story for you. Kim lives in Omaha, and one time I was going to Omaha, and this one real beautiful blonde, this is about almost 20 years ago, a beautiful blonde was hitchhiking on I-80, and I stopped and I said, what are you doing? You could get killed doing what you're doing. And her and her boyfriend went on a drinking binge and landed in Lincoln, and they broke up, and she decided to hitchhike back to Omaha.
Are you sure that wasn't me?
That was your second at Kim. Where were you 20 years ago?
She was in the program.
I don't know.
And she was in the program, and then she decided to go out with her boyfriend, and she broke her sobriety. But her middle name was Gorgeous, I tell you that much. Wow. But I was a gentleman. I took her home, and I told her, I hope you get back into the program and catch your sobriety again. But I couldn't believe she did something so dangerous. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was 20 years ago. It wasn't quite as bad as it is now, but still not a good idea. So, Alan, it's your fault. It was a segue. You know, I don't know if you guys, Les, you're on, and Craig, I don't know if you guys have rivalries in your state between the state next door, a city within your state, but Omaha, you know, Lincoln, where Alan is the capital. It's smaller in population, and it's a college town because that's where the Huskers are. But Omaha, you know, is the thriving business metropolis, quite a bit bigger, the biggest city in Nebraska. So we always have a little bit of rivalry. When it comes down to football, since this was a sports show tonight, we're all Huskers from Nebraska, whether we like football or not. But here's one for you, Alan, just to let you know where this Hump Night host is from. Yeah, we're the one.
That's right. So are you officially in Omaha still? Or are you in the outskirts now?
No, you know, I've been in the city, and I'm going to be inner the city. not that far. Actually, I'm not moving that far away from where I am. I'm moving just a few miles from where I am. But right now, I live on a really busy street. It's a six-lane street, actually, and that didn't bother me as much, but the neighborhood across the street is not the same as the neighborhood behind us, and I was just looking, kind of projecting out the next 10 years and looking at the lowest interest rates that we've had, you know, and this isn't going to last. This will be the third year. I have a feeling the inflation will set in, and we wanted to be done paying for a house by retirement age. Luckily, Gary's a little bit younger than me. And so we just made the decision, and we're moving into a neighborhood. It's a corner lot. It's a big yard, so we still don't have to socialize. I know you're always talking about that, Craig, about how we don't know people. The population isn't the same as it used to be, like talking over the backyard fence and neighboring and all of that, that everybody's kind of private. I've been guilty of that. I always have a privacy fence. I figure I don't care what you're doing in your backyard. You don't need to know what I'm doing in mine. But if I see in the front yard, you know, that's different now. You know, then we're good friends and we have talks and know who everybody is. But we're moving off the busy street and into a different neighborhood in a house kind of the same era. This house was born in 1959. It's what I call a retro ranch-style house. And the one we're moving to was built in 1960, also a retro ranch. But it'll be nice. It's a little bit smaller, so there won't be as much to keep up with. And we live on almost three-quarters of an acre right now, and this is just under half. So the dogs will still have a good-sized yard to play in. And but it's just scaling down a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll be really glad when it's over. I was really glad construction was over. It wouldn't have been so bad, but with anybody would have issues, but somebody like me had more issues, because when we were showing our house here, we were just packing boxes and kind of stashing them in one area of the basement. But when we sold here and started packing in earnest, and things got really chaotic, everything lost, everything in tubs, the dogs freaking out, me freaking out, we couldn't really move anything to the new house because they had that just a pit and were pounding all the time and drilling all the time and sawing all the time.
Damn construction people, no courtesy.
None at all. I mean, there was nowhere I could go. Like, I felt like I was going to have to go to church or something to find somewhere quiet for just a little while. So, yeah, one of those confessional deals. It would have kept me forever, and then I would have got hit by a bolt of lightning on the way out.
They get a hold of you, and they say, we got to talk to you.
I know. That's why I dialed direct to God. I was told I didn't have to go through a dogma house to get to God, you know, which, so God spelled backwards, dogma house. But I was going to go just to get the quiet and try to get myself centered, because it's very, that sensory overload, you know, going full throttle and no escape is tough. You know, at least when your house is your house, you could maybe go get some quiet in another room, you know, if things are chaotic and part of your house. But man, we own two houses for 30 days here, and I couldn't find peace and quiet in any of them. They're all just turned upside down. So I'll really be looking forward to, you know, it's going to take a while for us to unpack and do all of that kind of stuff. But at least Tuesday, when we close, when this house is finally closed and gone, and we don't have the two mortgages, and can start to get unpacked and get my life back, I'll be really happy. So tonight is my last broadcast from what I call Fort Justice, because we have this 6-foot privacy fence that goes around this house. The lot to the south of it came with it, so it's actually two lots, and that's how you get 3/4 of an acre. Well, we put a 6-foot privacy fence around the entire compound, so I've always called this Fort Justice. And so this
moat?
Is actually I do. So of course, would I leave that out of all the wonderful options you can get in a house? But so this is the last broadcast from Fort Justice, and next week will be from Villa de Justice, my new digs. So we'll see how that goes. So I'll have a little separation anxiety leaving here, but I'll be glad to get to land. And that's one of the songs on here, A Soft Place to Land. Maybe I'll play that later. But I see that Allie came back, so I'll unmute her, and I'll unmute Alan, and it's 11:24, so I can go finish packing for the rest of the night get ready to get up really early. I'm really a night owl. It's going to be hard for me to get up at 6:30 in the morning.
Ouch.
And be moving all day. I know, total ouch. So the whole weekend will be that way. But for those that don't remember, I didn't, because I've been so centered in being busy. Father's Day, for those it applies to, is this Sunday. So I want to wish all the fathers happy Father's Day, and hope you enjoy your Sunday. And I guess that's it. I guess I will play one song from the band Contractor. It was funny because I said to Gary, didn't he want to talk to me about the check when the check came up? And he said, no, he's afraid of you. I said, oh, okay. As well he should be, man. This is.
Did your husband say it with a happy snicker? Because he didn't want to argue. He didn't want to. Because I bet, yeah, you know, he didn't put up much of a fuss.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. As a matter of fact, before the contractor had been telling me, because he ran into this, and this, we were going to be looking at a lot more money, and I said yes, but you said you were going to do this, and this, and you either did it half-assed or you didn't do it at all. So you do your add-ins, and then you do your takeaways, and I have a feeling we're going to come out about flush. And sure enough, you know, Gary really wanted to keep me away from them. So for 2 days, I was banned from my new house. He told me I needed to stay here to keep my sanity intact. Because he watched me melt down in front of his eyes. I melted down and freaked out. He's never seen such a thing out of me before. And so he just had me stay here, and that was good. I got a lot accomplished here, and he got a lot accomplished there. And it was like, you know, Dad putting the hand between the two kids that are going after each other, you know. But yeah, I don't hold a grudge. It's kind of like last time our paths crossed when he did the bathroom here. I spent the last year loving my bathroom, but hating him when he was here, you know, making it, because always late, always making excuses, rationalizations, justifications, all the things that I just love when they're just rapid fire all the time. And this time, also did a fairly good job, but not without me having to fire the electrician and hire a different one, and get pretty jazzed about some things. So I won't hold a grudge. I am thanking God on my knees. This person is gone, and I will never be in that position with that person again. So that makes it easy to be forgiving. And after all, he did give me a few songs back at the first episode. So if you're out there and you're scared of me, You still have good reason to stay away.
I can't help but laugh. I'm sorry.
Stay away for a while, and then we'll be just fine when she gets her head back. This is Hard Times Band, aptly named, I'll have to say, with You're Never Alone, but right now he is. That was Never Alone by the Hard Times Band, who had a Yoko moment, and this was their one and only CD. And I must say that having John Cruise and this person in my house working at the same time, it was like a couple of peacocks. They traded CDs, and I can about guess what John thought. I know what Hard Times Band thought, because I was there one day before it was real bad, and I was playing loud music, and it was echoing, of course, because there was no furniture in the house. I was doing something, and John Cruise came on, and he was painting in the other room, and this guy's eyes got like saucers. He goes, "Who's that?" He said, that is really good. And I said, "It's a painter." And I just kept doing what I was doing, kind of for effect, right? And he goes, "Not the painter in the other room, John?" And I go, yeah, John, the painter in the other room. That's who it is, John Cruise, John Cruise Blues. And man, he could not believe it. And so he was always trying to hang around John. And today John told me how badly this guy felt as he was walking away with his dumpster and his head down, his tail between his legs when he left on Tuesday. And but John also, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine, and so clean, you know, he just said, yeah, he said they got a ways to come about knowing how to be, you know, professional, picking up after themselves and that kind of thing. He said there was just no excuse for that. So, you know, John was picking up after them all the time, but they did swap CDs. So it was kind of cool to have a couple talented musicians doing their craft at my place. And one of them, I'll promptly forget. You know, one of the things he was supposed to do that he didn't, we were talking about, you know, the different projects. One of them was to put in the doggy door, and he was supposed to build like a landing with a little ramp on it because it's up a little high. And so when I was firing them Tuesday night, or letting them know that they were done at the end of Tuesday, and we were talking about the add-ins and the takeaways, I said, now one of the takeaways is the suicide dog door, for God's sake. I said, if my dogs go running out that dog door, they're going to be splat. I said, now that was huge. I mean, you know, that was huge, you know, from a year and a half ago. You know what I'm like with my dogs? You get the dog door in, and like where they're going to go, boom, straight down. And so Gary and I are rigging a ramp for a couple of weeks, and then someone else is coming to build a little deck for us and the dogs so we can walk straight out. There's a couple of steps down to the patio now, and I've tripped on them a couple times. My depth perception gets kind of funny sometimes, and of course the dogs didn't have a ramp. They just had a suicide dog door. So we decided that providing everything goes the way that it should and our house closes Tuesday, we've got plans to put a little deck back there so we can all walk straight out and not be in jeopardy to ourselves. So I'll be glad when that day comes, but it just means one more person working, you know. But I'll get a couple week break to compose myself and feel settled before that guy comes. Plus he'll be outside, so he won't be making a mess inside our house. He'll just be in the backyard. So when it's all over with, it should be good, and I'll be looking forward to it. But
sounds good.
Anyway, tonight was an interesting show. I don't usually do sports shows. In fact, well, last week, Catherine LeBlanc, who had her story included in the Chicken Soup book, she was on. She had been a former athlete herself, but sports in general is not usually a topic that I do. I save that for the boys, but I had the opportunity to have these two wonderful guests on, Phil Hostler and Rosemarie Scalaro Moser. And I think that they were great guests and gave a lot of insight into the changing face of concussion over the years. So that'll probably be the last sports interview you'll hear out of me this year. but in any case, I did enjoy that. If I was going to do one on sports, they were the people to have to do it, that's for sure. She's a doctor, and he's an athletic coach. What did it say? Been inducted 4 times into the Hall of Fame as an athletic trainer. So both a couple highly credible sources, and I was very encouraged to know that a lot more is going on than I thought, at least in their neck of the woods. And as the legislation is going through in various states, and we go and talk to our schools about educating kids young to be safe, then maybe we can help avoid some of these lifelong compromising positions that kids get themselves into. also by educating their parents. You know, a lot of times the kids don't know any better, and the parents were never educated about it. And so that's why I appreciate shows like tonight for not only the kids that might be listening, but the parents getting educated on just, you know, maybe it's not just always a simple soccer game when your kids had two concussions. You know, maybe the kid didn't just snap out of two concussions in 7 days, and in grade school or junior high, that's a long time to carry around the kind of residuals that we do and have to live with that. Yeah, I see Leanne in the chat room says, Semper Fi, my dad was, and yes, my dad is too, once a Marine, always a Marine, so... Yeah, we got the devil dogs at our house.
Allie.
Hey, Allie. Your dad's a Marine, too?
Hey, my line just dropped. Yeah, my dad was a Marine as well. And, incidentally, he was playing football for the Marines, and my dad was a, more than likely, a toxic brain injury survivor. And but awesome, awesome, incredible man, very brilliant, very... much a man's man, very integrity rich and principled and all of that kind of thing. And as a Catholic, my dad was a Catholic as well. And wow. I was an athlete too.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
My dad too, he was lucky. He was between wars, and so my dad's tough duty was being on the Marine Corps tennis team in Japan. And mind you, my mom and him were high school sweethearts, and so they started liking each other when they were 16, 17. They were both king and queen of the prom, most likely to do everything in their high school yearbook. And then, surprise, I was a surprise. And they both had pretty lofty aspirations. My mom was athletic. She was a baton and dance Miss Majorette of Nebraska and taught baton and dance when I was a kid. But when I came along, surprise, they both came from very poor families. And so when the news got out, my parents got married, and then my dad immediately left for the Marine Corps. And so he didn't get to meet me until I was about 13 months old, when my mom and I rode the train out to Quantico and lived out there for, I don't know how long it was, maybe a year or so, and then came back and were a family. And he joined the Marines because he thought it would help him get through school, and he really got screwed. They took away the GI Bill for that little window that he was in right before and right after. Everybody got their school paid for, but he got
That's
a kid
terrible.
And had to pay for his own education. So he was raising a kid, working full-time, going to school full-time, and made it through 4 years of college and 3 years while working full-time, raising a kid. And up until my dad... was an A-seeded tennis player, and at 65 he was wiping the courts with 40-year-olds and 30-year-olds because he was into the thinking game. You know, the young people are faster, but the older people have the thinking game, so he'd wear them out, you know, by hitting from right to left, from right to left, make them run their butts off till they were exhausted, and he'd just stand there, you know, and wear them out. And then at 66, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and now is about 10 years into it. And I wish I could get him to listen to Dr. Kluver's show. He's on the first and third Wednesday of every month before my show. It's called Shaken, Not Stirred. He is a man my age who is a foot and ankle surgeon who was diagnosed with Parkinson's in his 50s, and that's what his show is about. And then, of course, my show, our family never acknowledged that there was anything to talk about my deal afterward when I lived. And, you know, a year out, we've never talked about it again. And And I know how frustrating and isolating and polarized my dad is because I went through that myself. Now, he can't know that about me because that wasn't a discussion that was brought up. But I know that him not going to support groups and the level of frustration I see that is so shaming and humiliating to him, not to me, but to him, you know, being the Marine, being the athlete, being the type A personality from the John T. Malloy generation, it's devastating to him and also to my mom because they were a very traditional couple. She was the perfect trophy wife and he was the businessman, and she's having to learn things in her 70s that even those of us with a brain injury take for granted, pumping our own gas. Some of us, I don't do my checkbook very good, but, you know, just some simple things she was used to having him do. And so their lives and the dynamic of their relationship, you know, over the last decade and into the future is changed a lot. So I just pray that he can find some solace somewhere. I feel very grateful and blessed that I've been able to after 17 years, and I just wish that, you know, one of the things I talk about on here sometimes is we don't always have a choice, but, you know, sometimes there is an element of it where we all have a choice. We can make it as hard or as easy on ourselves as we want to based on our attitude. And part of that is those four A's I talk about, you know, the awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. And so many people get stuck, and I'm seeing it in my family, you know, stuck between the A's. And, of course, nothing I have to say has ever impacted very much, I guess, because they know more and better, you know, than I do. And
well, a lot of that is generational too. I mean, I don't know that
absolutely
be as open to that, you know. And like I mentioned about my dad's injury, he more than likely sustained an anoxic brain injury because he was actually paralyzed for a period of time. And my dad's story mirrors very closely to the one that you shared about your parents. And when my dad became ill towards his last years of life. And just as your mom is probably going through it as well, the loss of her, like, dragon slayer or gladiator, that's huge.
Yeah.
And for a man caliber, you know, to lose that sense of himself, you know, to have seen himself as this iconic figure of what manhood is all about. And not saying that that's the only archetypal image that represents what is a man, you know, or what a man is, but for that generation of people, you know, I mean, those roles are bold and they're very fixed. And so it's really interesting. And one of the reasons why I've not yet transitioned back home to my house, and it's so amazing, I don't want to take up too much time, but I also had renovations done in my home. And as a matter of fact, I know I'm jumping stories a bit, but it's all interconnected because I had an experience with my contractor, my former contractor, where I just had to contact the Office of the Attorney General because I'm going to have to file a complaint and more work that I did not bargain for, don't need, don't have the stamina to take on, but I have no choice in a sense because I need to go on and wrap up this chapter because all of this stuff was things that I had taken on prior to my dad transitioning, but I had to put on hold. And so it wasn't until after he did in fact transition that I was able to get some things done, but making that Herculean jump from being on the I am here at my parents' house because I moved back home to help out when my dad got really ill and helping out with managing their household with the cooking, the cleaning, the laundering, the transportation needs, grocery shopping, that kind of thing, managing stuff with their contractors, the yard guy, all that kind of stuff. It was a lot, and it was just easier. And with an ailing dog who is also becoming a senior, it was easier to be here, but to transition back home in the midst of having kind of one foot on the dock and the other on the boat is very challenging, and I haven't figured out how to quite do that yet. And I don't have the mental stamina. I don't have the energy. I don't have the brain books to take that on. And there's something done here at my parents' house. But then I've amassed a veritable fort of duplicate items that I had at my house because I needed to function here, and it's just, I feel like I can't untangle it. And I feel
very frustrating.
And meanwhile, I have a beautiful home waiting for me, but I haven't even unpacked. This was last year.
Wow.
And my neighbors are like, what the heck is going on, you know? But I feel like I just can't take it on. It's not a priority. And family was, and being here for my mom. But also the rhythm of a household functions very differently than the rhythm of being a single person in a home living basically alone. Even if you have a significant other, if they're not living there and you visit one another's homes, it's still different. The rhythm of your home is different. So going from having meals, and we have figured out this symbiotic dance of making sure that our needs are covered and all the bases are covered, and lived on her own because she and my dad have known one another all their lives. For the most part, she was the kid sister of my dad's best friend. And that's her oldest brother. And so our families are very interconnected like that because our families grew up together. So a lot of history, a lot of beautiful history. And
I hear that in your talk. I do. I hear that in what, the way you describe it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You're a better guy than me. I'm an only, so I know there's been a lot, but there'll be a lot more coming down the road. I couldn't live there, for sure. So my hat's off to you. I'll be able to help as much as I can help, but that's not one of the things I'd be able to do. So good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine how it must be for you. So
you were married, and as a single person, the expectations are different. In a family, whether you're an only or not, and you're close by, geographically speaking. So, guess what? Ding, ding, ding. You win the prize. You're going to be the caretaker.
Yeah, I know. Well, on that happy note, everybody, we're down to the end of the hour. I can still hear it. God, I don't think Gary's ever been up this late in his life, so I'm going to go in and help finish up the packing. He must really be freaking out about now. I figure, what the heck, anything that we don't move, I'm just going to stick in the pile for the donations and call it a day. If I haven't used it or missed it in the 6 years we've been here, I don't need it, I guess. So in any case, thank you, Alan, Allie, Craig, Les, for being on the board. Leanne, always good to see you. Want to thank everyone for listening and supporting Brain Injury Radio and Recovery Now here on Hump Night. We'll be saying au revoir to Fort Justice and hello to Villa de Justice next week. So I hope you guys all have a wonderful weekend, a great week. And we'll see you next week. I'm going to close out with Honey Boy Turner. And this is what I have been feeling and shortly to turn around. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Wishing you all the best with your podcast.
Love it.
Woke up this morning
with them blues for Omaha. Can't afford no bus ticket, sure ain't got no car. Kansas to my south, Colorado to my west, I wanna go east to the place I love the best. Got stuck in Lincoln with the blues for Omaha. Can't afford a bus ticket, might have to steal myself a car. That's what I'm saying.
My car.